Tuesday night call.
Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. There's Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. We're getting everybody on the board here. And we'll have Mr. Jesse with us, as in right now. Good evening, sir.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
I'm trying to find that darn email that I told you I'd sent, and apparently something happened, didn't go. So I'm trying to find it and resend it to you, my friend.
Yeah. I watched your presentation the other day live.
Yep. Nice.
That was cool.
Good.
That was cool. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, she got a kick out of it.
I know she did.
Still hearing about it.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm still looking for, where's Mr. Jeffrey
Larry.
Here?
Hey,
yeah,
Larry.
Larry's on, John's on,
here.
And trying to round up Terry and Jeff, and I'm not seeing them yet on the board here. Oh, it's been an interesting day.
Tell me about it. I'm working on that appeal for the 11th today, and it's due by midnight, so I'm waiting for the last rough draft to come in, so it was finalized with all the appendages and everything. Ah, it's been an all-day affair yesterday and today. Poor Marshall's going at it like crazy. Because I keep throwing things at him, of course. But I think we got it down pretty good. So as for the membership goes, we're going to have one hell of a nice, nice appeal example, which I know a lot of people want that. So that's going to be good. Really, really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm pretty excited. And I think we just keep it simple, strategies and all that stuff, you know, which is very important.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep it as simple as you can, but yet it's not always simple for obvious reasons. You know, some of the stuff you really got to put a lot of work and thought into. But, like I've said so many times, how bad do you want it? That's going to determine how much work
exactly
you put into
it. You got it, buddy. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's not a whole lot to it. I mean, you just got to, you got to do it. And so be it. I mean, it is what it is. It doesn't bother me any. But we've been at it quite some time today.
Well, there's Terry.
Yeah.
Terry has joined us. Good evening, ma'am. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Hi, Ms. Terry.
Good. I'm pretty good. All we got to do is snag Mr. Jeffrey, and we got a full house here. But you want to go ahead and do a disclaimer quick and get that out of the way as long as we're rolling?
Yeah, let's do that while we wait for Jeff. Good evening, everybody. Again, listen, first and foremost, I want to thank Dave and Terry and Jeff and Larry and everybody for covering last week while I was up north. I appreciate you guys beyond what you even can possibly think, and I'm sure our members do too. It meant a lot to my wife, obviously. Dave, as you know, we had our 26th wedding anniversary, guys, and that's actually tomorrow is actually the actual date. But last year, with a rough year with her dad passing, her grandma passing, her mother getting lung cancer, our dog dying, basically our 25th came and went, and we didn't really do much. So I re-proposed to my wife this year, and it was really, really special to her and to me too. I think it's very important to let your spouse know that, you know, you still love them and you're still in love with them. And she said yes, which, you know, that was her chance to run, and she didn't take it. So that was a good thing. But again, I just want to thank you guys.
I know Danny.
You know.
No way she's going to do that.
I love you guys, man. And again, you know, our members count on you guys, count on me. And when one of us is not here, you guys seem to always come through. And I can't thank you enough for that. So I get that out of the way. Again, guys, listen, for you new members and new people that are on the call first time, welcome aboard. Glad to have you. But we got to get something straight right off the bat that everything we're going to discuss tonight and all the different cases and all the good news and all our cases and everything, it's just a bunch of legal information. There's no legal advice intended to be given, and none will be given because we wouldn't even know what the heck that really is. And I think you could ask an attorney, and he probably couldn't tell you what legal advice is. But at the end of the day, guys, If you want legal advice, go ask an attorney. We encourage you. As a matter of fact, we encourage a lot of our members in certain situations to go get some kind of legal advice from a licensed practicing bar member, because we're not, and we don't purport to be. And again, you know, nothing that we discuss tonight should be taken as legal advice, because for sure, it's absolutely not intended to be taken that way. So with that being said, that was my good news. My wife said yes. She didn't take her opportunity to run. The other good news is I'm at the appeal level now, finally, on that case with the credit pulls, and I'm very, very comfortable with the appeal. And I'll share that with everybody here in the next few days when I get the entire appeal over with everything attached and done in one big PDF. I'll go ahead and redact everything that is necessary, and we'll go from there. And for those of you that are new, by the way, Dave, I just want to mention this. We do a lot of redacting with all our documentation, and I encourage Dave to do that, and Larry and John and whoever else. And the biggest reason is simple. There was just a case where an idiot, pro se, was out there bragging on all the boards and talking all kinds of nonsense, and basically just lost his case, lost his appeal, not because he wasn't right. As a matter of fact, the jury said, yeah, you're right, but you're a moron, and you're going to pay these guys $30,000. So I want to make sure that everybody understands why the privacy and the redaction is so important, because nothing that any of our members do or moderators is out there for bragging rights or to hurt anybody. It's just an enforcement of your rights. That's all it is. So just remember that, okay? So I know that some people wonder, Dave, why that is. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that. And the case was sent out to everybody. I know most of the members received it. But, again, privacy is of the utmost importance. And intent, there is no ill intent. It's just enforcement of what's yours and holding people accountable that shouldn't be doing what they're doing to a lot of people in this country. So with that being said, Terry, thank you for all those. Gary's working on getting those up. Terry's just come across a gold mine.
Yeah, isn't it?
So I haven't had a chance to look at it. Trust me, I've been buried since 5 o'clock in the morning yesterday. So
The one that you want to look at, over and above all the others, Jefferson Capital versus Jefferson
– Let me tell them what it is. Yeah, and remember, try to keep this.
Yeah, I just want to say
for the members, yeah,
there is no redaction. The whole thing is word for word exactly as it was written, and the pertinent parts of it are highlighted by Ms. Dally Jimenez, the author of Dirty Debt Sold Dirt Cheap. So you really want to look
at that. Awesome. Yeah. And what it is, guys, is this. Terry has come across, I think it was 44 buy-sell contracts from debt collectors who buy thousands upon thousands of accounts at one shot. So our members are going to have an absolute heyday looking into these. And if you're being sued by a debt collector, you might be able to go to one of these and find that debt collector and say, well, wait a minute. Here's, you know, what you usually do, admit, and you don't need to let them know anything. You could use it under discovery for admissions, admit or deny that, whatever you find is pertinent to you there. And you got them dead to rights. So that's a gold mine, Terry. I can't thank you enough. I don't know who the author or who actually took the time to find those or whatever, put them together, but thanks again. Our members are really going to benefit. Really? Okay. Well, thank whoever that is. I don't know who that is, but, you know.
Well, she's a consumer attorney.
Oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Awesome find. So that is absolutely fantastic. I can't say enough about it. So great find, Terry. And that's it. I'll hand it over to Dave. I don't know. I have no other good news. I'm good, and I think that's plenty.
Well, the only I haven't had much good news lately myself. Most of my news has been bad, everything from the engine failing in my car to really injuring my knee 10 days ago, and that is getting a little better. A 3-hour nap today helped some.
That never hurt.
I've been kind of, yeah. Well, it was hurting before that nap, I'll tell you, and it feels better. It's amazing how 3 hours of sleep can help your body rejuvenate when you've been injured. And I took a hit and was self-inflicted. I fell right here at home unexpectedly, but I'm getting better. The only, I guess, good news that I can throw out that I have is on the class action lawsuit that I'm the lead plaintiff on for 103 calls, the company
Nice.
Started calling my cell phones again. And I told our attorney last week, and I assumed he would probably send that information on to counsel on the for the defendant. Either he did and they're incompetent, or he hasn't sent it yet because they're still calling me. I've got about a dozen more calls on top of the 103 that I had for the lawsuit. So it's pretty bizarre what some of these companies do. And, you know, you just never know. So that's about what I've got. But I want to check, do any of our other moderators have any good news that they want to share with us? Terry, John?
My good news is I'm going to hang up on this one and dial back in. I just got off. So.
Yeah, you sound like you're in a tunnel.
Yep.
Okay, all right. I still haven't found Jeff. He must be tied up with something. He must have had something come
yeah,
up
he might be
for a while. Well, you know, we never know. He's got a daughter at home, and who knows what can happen when you got kids around. Terry, you didn't you have just a little tidbit of stuff on yours that you could say was good news?
Yeah, I would say the judge handed down an order last week. They put in a motion to file under seal those two contracts. And the judge kind of headed me off at the pass, didn't even give me a chance to put in an opposition. He handed down an order that I should file everything, my whole opposition to their summary judgment, the two contracts, all my exhibits, in under seal temporarily. And he gave them 3 days to come up with an opposition and a convincing story why he should grant them to be filed under seal. Meanwhile, I had found that contract that is out there for all the world to see, not even redacted. Even the financials are in it. And I included the link to that in my opposition. So come Friday, they have until Friday to get that done. It was docketed last night. So you can't get at it yet until the judge rules on it, but that's really good. I don't mind not getting a bite at the argument, Apple. I don't think I need it.
No, I think the judge is in your court, actually.
Well, I'll tell you something about this judge. He is what you could refer to as an absolute 100% straight arrow. He is fair.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff.
By the rules. He doesn't give anybody wiggle room.
And you can't ask for any more than that either. You know,
no,
we don't ask
you,
for preferential treatment, but
thing.
We don't. Yeah, but we don't expect the other side to get it either.
When he thought I might, you know, make the wrong move or whatever, he made sure I understood what was proper and what I could do and what I couldn't. I have endeavored at every turn to comply by the rules. I have really, really worked hard on this case. And he shows that he appreciates it, while the other side has done nothing but engage in dilatory tactics and shenanigans and lying to the court a number of times.
Yeah, and the judge has picked up on it.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he couldn't miss it. He's had his face lied to by them more than one occasion.
Yeah. And you did something, I want to mention this, although I don't think it's good to expound on this at all at this point in time, but I want to make this point real quick. Part of what Terry has been doing in the last few days is she did some more due diligence on the law firm she's dealing with, which is the second law firm in that case, and she found some very, 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 very interesting information that will be useful to her going forward. So, as we've said so many times, know who you're dealing with.
I will say there is, and I'm not going to say what it contains or who it's with, but there is a paragraph in one of the contracts that if the law firm understood the FCRA at all, if they had any kind of a clue what the S2B means, that paragraph would have been redacted. They really screwed up by not redacting that paragraph, and I could not understand how they could be that stupid until I discovered what I discovered about the law firm, and now I understand. They don't have a clue, literally.
Yeah. So, again, you know, the big point I wanted to make there for everybody is, and it doesn't matter whether you're in a big lawsuit or anything, when you start out here and you have an opponent on the other side, take the time to do the due diligence on the lawyers individually and the law firm that you're dealing with on the other side. That doesn't mean just a quick Google, oh, well, yeah, they're debt collection lawyers. It can go much further than that. Look for cases, look up some history, because you can learn an awful lot about the abilities or lack of abilities of who you're dealing with on the other side.
And
so,
when you're really confused and you're sitting there saying to yourself, they can't be this stupid. They're lawyers. They can't be this stupid. And then if you really go and look, do your research, you can find the answers as to why they did what they did.
Yeah, and it proves out that they're stupid.
Yeah.
Let's just put it this way. Substantially uninformed as to certain things. Is that a better way to put it, maybe?
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't have to be stupid to be ignorant.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's very true. Okay. All right. Well, if anybody has any good news, and good news only at this time, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. We've got a couple people up. We're going to do good news. And then we will get into our Q&A for tonight. So to begin with, we're going to go to 770 for good news. You got some good news for us tonight?
No.
Okay. Then we'll have you in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And then we're going to go to 619 for good news.
Positive.
619, you've been unmuted for good news. You got some good news for us?
I think when you're dead, that makes you look like...
Well, evidently, they're not paying attention. They don't have good news for us. So we'll pass that up. Okay, one more time, if anybody has any good news. And good news ebbs and flows. Make no mistake about it. There's sometimes we've got a ton of it, and there's other times it's a little quieter. We are coming off the end of the summer. We know people have taken time off, and a lot of times during the summer there isn't quite as much activity. You know, some of us, like John, Jeff, Terry, and Jesse, myself, Larry, you know, season makes no difference. We plow
ahead. That's right.
All year round, but we know that there's other people that have family commitments and they're going to maybe slow down during the summer and go do their things. So don't let the fact that we don't have a bunch of good news on any one given call think, oh, well, yeah, well, nobody's doing anything with this. Not hardly. Not the case. All right. Well, seeing as how we don't have anybody else that stepped up, then for all of you that have questions, hit the one key on the keypad in your phones and we'll get rocking and rolling and start answering questions. I do want to throw out again the reminder to everyone. Please be concise with your questions, not a five-minute story, and then get to your question. Question being singular. We don't want to get into a bunch of questions. We want to try and cover as many people as we possibly can because we do get a lot of people asking questions. We want to help as many people as possible. So with that said, we're going to go to 773. I think we're going to go. There we go. The platform went there. 773, you've been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please. 773.
Hey, guys. How you doing, Dave, everybody? How's everybody doing? This is Wayne from Chicago.
Yeah, doing pretty good, Wayne. How are you?
I'm good, good. Hey, listen, guys, real quick. This is for Jesse. Jesse, I'm helping my son-in-law out on a situation because you had a good experience with dealing with the mortgage servicer, very successful that. My question is that I have a I'm helping my son-in-law out. He has a property in North Carolina, and he lives in Illinois. And what happened is that his son has a property in his name, but the debt collector is calling my son-in-law, okay, you know, in an attempt to collect the debt as the servicer. I'm sorry, as the debt collector. When they call, they say that they're the servicer and debt collector. Now, here's the scenario.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? Okay,
well, here's the scenario. My son-in-law is only on the title. He's not on the mortgage or anything. And what happened
was... Wait a minute. Let me ask you a quick question, pal. Is he on the note? When you say not on the mortgage, is he on the note as a signer?
No, he's not. He's only a quick claim deed onto the title.
Oh, okay. Then they have no business calling him.
Right. So the other, the finish up that scenario is the what his son did is that he told, because he was in a bad car accident, his head almost got literally taken off of him, but he's fine now. It's been a few years ago. So what happened, Jesse, was that he the son had wrote a note to the mortgage servicer, Centerus Mortgage. And what happened was that he told him that he's giving his father the authorization to talk to them in the event of his mortgage. He didn't say you can call them, but actually he did say that.
How did he say? Yeah, he's going to.
Okay, let me say this.
Yeah,
I didn't want to confuse you, but he wrote in a letter and a note. He said that you can talk to. And then he said his name, his father's name, but he didn't give him the father's cell phone number. Well, the father did not authorize them to do that. So what would you say about that?
Well, like I said, they have no reason to call him. I don't know what your question is.
Well, the question
is, question.
Even though that the son said in his letter, given the servicer authorization to talk to his father regarding his mortgage, okay, but the father did not authorize him to give them the number. To call him, and they called him over literally, guys, over about 102
okay.
calls.
Well, here's the problem. You know, you remember that I can't give consent for somebody to call your phone. It'd be me giving consent for me to spend your money.
Right.
I
guess what I'm doing, Jesse. I guess I'm just. I know the answer, but I guess I'm just getting confirmation because I'm ready to file this suit.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. Absolutely. So you can't give consent. On behalf of somebody else. Simple as that.
Okay, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's my question, guys,
so
I didn't want to hold up you guys for the call tonight, but that's I had the answer already. I just need a confirmation.
The key words there are express consent or implied consent.
Implied. That's
right. It has to be express consent, which he did not give. They may think they have implied consent, but that doesn't count.
Right. That's what I figured also, Dave. I thought, you know, that they might, I still think they might come back with that kind of garbage about implied, but, you know, you're right.
That's where all the members and all the listeners need to go and study the statute carefully and see what is required, and then go Google both implied consent and express consent and understand the difference between them. So if you're dealing with this stuff and you ever are challenged on something, you know what you're talking about when you go back and say, well, you're talking about implied consent. There was no express consent given. So know how to make your arguments.
Right. All right, guys, that's it. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right.
All righty. Thank you. All right. Let's go to 909. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Good evening. Good evening. This is Larry, San Bernardino. Was hoping to have some good news to report today, but it turns out to be bad.
Why?
I got a ruling. You know, I talked to you a couple of weeks ago. I was having a hearing on the motion to dismiss submitted by my opponents. I had filed a FDCPA lawsuit. And we had supposed to have a hearing yesterday, but found out that the judge had made a ruling a couple, 3 days before the hearing, so he canceled the hearing and ruled against me. He took the easy way out. What he did was rule that the FDCPA was, he dismissed that with prejudice because in California, mortgagers or foreclosure action is not considered a violation of FDCPA. So he ruled against that and then declined to accept jurisdiction over the other state claims. So he kicked me out of his court and said down at the bottom of his orders, I might want to refile my state claims in Los Angeles State Court.
Well, that's his option, that's for sure.
Yep, he took the easy way out.
And that
well,
happens,
generally, you're going to find...
He...
Yeah, you're going to find when they dismiss a federal claim, and especially with prejudice, so there's no chance it's coming back around, they will generally, at least from what I've seen out here in a number of cases, where they will then decline... to accept jurisdiction over state law claims and tell you to go back to your state court and file them there.
Yeah, that's what he did.
That's
one question, though. Does the fact that MERS assigned the deed of trust to the bank, you know, right before they initiated foreclosure, does that count as taking over the loan after it's in default or not?
Of course. The question that you have to ask is, were you in default when it was assigned? You're asking it backwards.
Well, yeah, because I've been in default for about 4 years,
there you go.
And they assigned it, you know, right before they started foreclosure. But he didn't consider that.
Well, then,
you need to argue it.
Yeah, you got to appeal that.
Yeah.
And that's not that hard of an appeal, really, with yours.
So
but,
just
you know,
base it on the fact that they assigned MERS assigned it to them days before the foreclosure, huh? He just said
but it's a matter of whether it was in default when they assigned
See, yeah,
it.
You're
if
confusing.
It was in default. If it was in default, they are a debt collector and they are in fact subject to the FDCPA, and there's a ton of case law out there to support it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But he didn't consider that. He just said foreclosure is not a actionable item under the FDCPA, period.
No, he's wrong. And that's what you have to...
He's dead wrong.
Yeah, he's absolutely dead wrong.
Should I make a motion for reconsideration or re-something?
You can if you'd like.
What would
that's
be,
up to you, man.
What
Me?
Would you guys
I would absolutely like? Just appeal it.
Appeal?
Yeah, I wouldn't do anything.
Okay. All right.
It's obviously a judge that doesn't know what the law says, or he's just trying to short-circuit you and throw you away. You're a pro se. You don't know anything. You're not going to argue about it.
Right.
Yeah. And listen, I hate to say it, either that or you didn't present it correctly.
Or he just doesn't want to deal with it, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know how you wrote your complaint and exactly how you stated your cause of action. And if you didn't state it properly, then that's a problem.
I probably
even for
didn't,
appeal.
Yeah, I probably didn't point out the – although I argued that, hey, MERS didn't have the authority to assign
that
note.
Yeah, well, see, that's the wrong thing to assign. So, you know, I mean, they didn't assign a note. They assigned probably just the deed. But, again, that's irrelevant to the FDCPA claim. So, again, I know for a fact now, just by your mentioning of that, that you just went the total wrong direction. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can argue to you with me till you're blue in the face. I already know that when you bring an FDCPA and you're talking about authority to assign or not assign, you're way off base. Way off base. It's the manner of which it's collected. It has nothing to do with assignability or anything. None of that matters. So,
well,
you know, at the end of the day, you have to believe that.
I'm confused now. Are you saying that that assignment at right before beginning foreclosure doesn't matter?
No. You missed
my
point again. That's not the issue. The issue is it was assigned while it was in default, which now qualifies them as a debt collector. Whether they had the right to assignment or not is a whole different argument.
But they did. They did it. That's the fact that the
fact that they did it is what matters. Whether they had authority or not is irrelevant to the matter.
Yeah.
You see, that's my point.
Yes,
that's why you got to really study up on this stuff. And the judge, see, you have to point out clearly. You said initiated foreclosure. And for all you guys that are new, think about this. If I initiate foreclosure on the website, you know, when is your servicer a debt collector? When is your trustee a debt collector? It's a very simple question. Are they asking for any monetary in their demand? That's really the simple question.
Yeah.
If it's an action in rem, means for just the property. For just the property. If it's not worded that way specifically, and they're asking for a deficiency judgment or any other fees, attorney's fees, late fees, that's all money. That's all a collection activity. But, of course, if you don't point this out clearly right from the beginning, this is what you run into. Because if they're just saying, give me the house and go away, okay. That's just what are they doing? That's an equity action. But
that's
not the way it works.
No,
that's not what they did.
Huh?
That's not what they do. Because somebody has to pay that attorney to process it. There's late fees being attached. Attorney's fees, inspection fees, title fees. There's money being collected outside the equity of just taking the home in. You got to read the cases. That's why I tell everybody, read before you just file it. Understand what you're doing.
And the notice of default demanded like $16,000 to reinstate it when they sent the notice of default.
And what was in that notice of default? My point is, what was the dollar amount? $16,000, right?
$16,000, yeah.
That's right. So the point is $16,000, right, included what?
Back payments, late fees, et cetera.
Thank you. Late fees.
There you go.
Late fees. You're done. Now, on top of that, you have to understand that once I've accelerated the mortgage and I send you the notice of default, I can no longer be collecting late fees. There's no more payments due.
Yeah.
Understand?
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to get this. I want everybody listening to get this. Because, again, generally, the easiest way out, and I know, Dave, you're going to shut me up because we've got to go, and you're right. But the easiest way out is the most common sense approach. And the problem is everybody tries to legalize everything and just, you know, listen, if you accelerate and I say you owe me all $100, now you don't owe me any more payments. Your $10 a month payment is useless. You owe me all $100. How can I charge you a monthly late fee when I've already asked you for the whole $100? So I can't say, oh, you owe me $10 extra a month on top of it for late. For what? I didn't ask for a payment. I want the whole thing. You see, these are just common sense arguments. That's all. So, again,
yeah.
Sorry, but I would probably I can't say appeal or not appeal because I have no clue at what you did or didn't do. And at this point, I have no idea.
Okay.
Make
all
sense?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
All right,
okay.
So thank you for the learning lesson for everybody else.
That's
sometimes
good for
it works.
Everybody.
Buddy, I've lost. I've lost myself, and I take them all as learning lessons, every one of them. Don't care about it in any which way, shape, or form, pal. Just the way it is. Go file your state claims and make sure you get them correctly.
Do you think it'd be wise file those in state court? Or you always say in state court is the worst place to file anything.
You don't have a choice at this point, do you?
That's the only place you got. That's the only alternative you have to do anything at this point.
Okay.
So.
All right.
All righty, we got to move
Thank
on
you.
Here.
Yep, yeah, we sure do.
Okay, we're going to go to 305. We're going to go down in Jesse's neck of the woods. 305,
hey,
you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
All right, is there an echo? I just wanna, I got you on speaker.
We're getting a little bit of noise in the background, like maybe you're driving or something.
Yeah, I'm driving. Sorry about that. This is Jonathan in Miami. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. How
good,
are you?
Good,
good. All right, I'm just touching base with on my case, just to refresh your memory. I wanted to file a amended complaint to add other defendants on my foreclosure case, on, well, the people that are involved in the foreclosure case. And the defendant filed a motion to dismiss, but it was not, the judge had not ruled on it yet. So last time I had caught in, I was wondering, do I just file it or am I supposed to ask the court for permission?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Well, it turns out that, you know, I was supposed to confer with the defendant or the opposing counsel. So he filed a motion in opposition because I didn't confer with them according to the local rules. So anybody that's paying attention and listening right now, it's crucial that you do take a look at your local rules. It's very, very important. So what I ended up doing is I emailed him. I called him and I emailed him and let him know that, you know, I'm pursuant to the local rules. I'm conferring with them in regards to filing an amended complaint. Now, in addition to, you have to file a motion for leave to amend, actually, which I thought was interesting. And you have to confer with opposing counsel. You have to show a certificate of conferring with opposing counsel, and you actually have to file the amended complaint along with it, according to the local rules down here in South Florida, Southern District of Florida. So I was just calling to see if you guys knew anything about this, and if I would just be able to go in and file. I don't even know what to do at this point, if I have to just wait for the judge to rule on my motion, or can I just refile my motion explaining, you know, how I messed up and with all the proper information.
Well, you already filed one motion to file an amended complaint, but you made the mistake, so you're wanting to just redo it. Is that it?
Correct.
I don't know. Jesse, you got more experience down there than I do, obviously.
I would probably file a motion. Golly, you already have the motion. You got stalled. I would probably file
corrected
a motion.
Motion for leave to amend?
Yeah, I would do a corrected motion for leave to amend and then beg the mercy of the court because you're a pro se.
Okay.
Make sense?
No.
That makes sense or no?
Court,
that makes follow the rules.
Yes, that makes complete sense. Beautiful. I love it.
Yeah,
you know, don't
basically,
be afraid.
I'm sorry.
You know,
I'm sorry. Help me out.
Yeah, you're not playing kiss ass, but you're being respectful, saying, okay, court, I'm sorry, I made an error, I have found my error, and here's my attempt to correct it in good faith. Please take notice of this and let me move forward.
Beautiful. Awesome.
In the interest of justice, put that in there somewhere, like in your wherefore statement, you know, request the court allow you to take note of your corrected motion for leave to amend and have things done properly so that justice may be served.
There you go.
Okay. Beautiful. Awesome. You guys are the best.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but we'll help you.
I don't know about that either. We try our best. That's all we can do.
That's right.
All right, awesome, man. I appreciate it. I'll get back in
with
you and keep on listening.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Alrighty. You bet. All right. Thank you.
All right.
And we're going to go over to his next door neighbor across the street at 305. 305-454, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good evening. This is Maria. I have a motion to dismiss that is going to be heard next week, and I'm kind of preparing for it. My question is, the motion to dismiss, basically I need to argue the four corners of the complaint. One of my arguments is that the chain of title, meaning the assignments and everything else, there's a break in it. And I have evidence that
That's not a reason
not
to dismiss. That's not a reason to dismiss. That's not a reason to dismiss.
No?
No.
So that's
no. Think about the four corners of the complaint.
Okay.
Think about the four corners of the complaint and then ask yourself the question, what does that have to do with the four corners of the complaint? They're going to allege, here's what they're going to allege, that this was assigned to them prior to the litigation being started, correct? That's probably in there, I would venture to guess.
Yes, no?
They never allege that?
Well, yeah, they allege that it was signed right before they started the complaint, yes.
Okay, so now rather than go in and go, oh, well, I have proof in the brain of title, a reason to dismiss is, listen, they didn't comply with 57-105, what is it, John, it's 50, oh, God, I'm so damn tired, I'm telling you. It's
57-105. Oh.
No, it's not 57-105.
559.
Which requires that they notify you 30 days prior to filing any action of the assignment of the debt. All the case history is right on the website. All you got to do is go to the pleading section to Florida. There's a whole section on 559-715. There is a reason to dismiss.
Okay.
If you go in to the judge and you say, well, look, I got proof that you're outside of the complaint. So that what that did is a conditions precedent, because within the complaint it says that they met, they have all conditions precedent have been met. That's a lie. That's a reason to dismiss.
Okay. So they did not meet the conditions precedent. I know the condition precedent is a lot more than just the assignment as well.
Yeah, but this is huge. Go read 559-715 on the website. Go read it. You're going to go, holy crap. And then you're going to hurry up and you're going to do an amended motion to dismiss right now. And you're going to go in there and serve it to them. Get it in there before the hearing. You got to get it done, because if you're going to go in there and say, well, there's a break in the chain and all that, that's all for discovery. That's all for affirmative defenses. That's all for everything but discovery or motion to dismiss.
Yeah.
Hey, Jesse, correct me if I'm wrong, but based on Florida statutes, and John as well, they should have pled in their complaint that they took those actions, according to 57-105, correct?
Yeah, they did.
The what?
They did plead that they took those actions, and they say that all condition proceedings were met, which they were not.
No. Listen to what Larry said. They never described that they complied with the Florida statutes.
It's not enough just to say, hey, we did what we're supposed to. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, that's exactly all they ever say. No, that's a standard form in the 1900 forms for the attorneys.
Well, of course.
1940s or 41. And that's all it says. All conditions preceding have been met. That's it.
Yeah. Did they specify that we have met the requirements of 57.105 by sending notice of assignment within 30 days?
I guarantee you they didn't.
I guarantee they didn't.
No. And that, again, you need to go, you're a member, correct?
Yes.
Go to the pleadings, libraries, and go into Florida and go look at 57-105. It's going to blow your mind away. You're going to go, holy crap. Then you can also go, oh, you know what? Marshall never sent me that list. You can also use a motion to dismiss. You can also throw the cost bond in there of the out-of-state defendants or out-of-state plaintiffs. If they are, then they need to file a cost bond. That's also in there. And then we can go on to the argument with having a brain fart. Again, forgive me. I've been up since 5. Taxes that they have to pay whenever they transfer. So that's how Velva won her last two cases.
Document stamps.
Yeah, the doc stamp argument. So you have, those are all reasons to dismiss. A break in a title is just an affirmative defense. That has nothing to do with anything. So that's why I want you to question yourself. That make sense?
Okay. All right. I'll get back on the queue because I have another question.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
In the meanwhile, before you ask the question, go to the website while you're on the phone, look it up, familiarize yourself with that, then come back and ask the question.
Okay.
Okay, Maria, and to help put you in there properly, please, after I mute you here, please hit the one key and take yourself out, and then hit the one key and put yourself back in again, okay?
Okay, so I have to hit one twice?
Yeah, do it, and then wait a few seconds, and then hit it again if you would.
Okay, great.
That'll help me out. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right. We are going to go to, as soon as I get that unmuted here, now we're going to go to the person on the other corner down there, our third 305 caller tonight. These are the people on the other corner of the intersection. 305-439, you're up to bat.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
How are you?
Beautiful. This is Bridget. I have good news. I have a question, too, but I want to do my good news. I had called in like about, I want my good news said too. This is my first good news. I called you guys about 3 weeks ago to do a motion for extension of time to serve defendants.
Yeah, I remember.
Remember me? It was granted.
Awesome,
very
man.
So
good.
I'm feeling really good. Yes, I did word for word what you said, David, and she granted it. I was feeling so good about that.
All right.
So,
awesome.
Okay, so what my question is, I have them also in appeals, and they finally did their answer brief, but they also submitted a motion for attorney's fees claiming that I have a contract with them when I don't. Should I answer the motion before I do the reply brief, or can I do it at the same time? Because, you know, motions, you answer it like within 10 days. But answer brief is 20 days.
Well, you have to read your rules. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
No, I've read. That's what I did. I did read the rules, but there's another clause in there where it also says that when you're doing your answer brief, for them to do the to also submit a motion for attorney fees. So since it's a motion, I don't know if I answer it if I address that one at a different time. Because my reply brief isn't ready yet. You guys don't know?
No, you got to read your rules. I have no idea.
I did. It's given me two.
No, come on.
It is, Jesse. It says, no, really, it says motion practice. Maybe that one was for extension of time. I'm going to read it again. But
read it again and then come back on the line. Do that.
Okay, but I have one more question. In the appeal part, this one is real quick. In the appeal portion of it, they answered when the judge ordered them to reply, you know, that you get the 20 days. One of the defendants replied for all of the defendants. Can they do that?
Well, an attorney can reply for all of them.
Yeah.
But the attorney is a defendant of the case.
So he's going pro se?
No, he's going under Schultz and Bowen. He is one of the defendants, and he's replying for all of the defendants.
Then he's a pro se defendant. If his name is on the defendant's list and he's answering, he's pro se.
And he can answer for all of the defendants because he's answering.
No, he shouldn't be able to, right, Larry?
Is he signing individually, or does he put his bar number there?
His bar number is there. It's stamped at the bottom. I got the email yesterday. In the he answered with a motion to dismiss, as well as I can't remember the other form that he did because I was doing a whole bunch of stuff today. But his bar stamp is there. It looks exactly like how it normally looks in state court, because everyone who touched the case at the foreclosure judgment, I sued all of them, and he was one of them, and I sued him, and he replied to the summons for everybody.
Okay, so he's representing everybody.
Yeah, he's representing them all. He's acting as counsel.
Okay, I'm really
confused. He's an defendant. He can represent everybody.
Yeah. It's probably stupid on his part, on their part, but that's you can do that. In fact, it's good for you. Now, you hold on. I'm confused. You were talking about a reply brief.
I am too, man.
Say that again. I didn't hear you.
You said something about
a reply brief,
an answer brief.
No, there's two questions that I asked. One of them is because I have them in appeal.
Oh, okay. In
I
a different case.
The right, it's a different case. I appealed the foreclosure judgment. It took them a year and a half to reply to the appeal, to my initial brief. And they replied to the initial brief with a whole bunch of stuff saying that I consented, and the consent was already dismissed. Oh, that was another good news, too. They tried to get my appeal dismissed, stating that I consented to judgment. However, I contested that. Jesse, you told me about that. I contested their motion to dismiss my my appeal, and the judge granted against them. He didn't give them the...
He denied their motion.
Yeah, he ruled against. He denied their motion, exactly. However, in their answer brief, they're using that same tactic as the answer brief. How do you think I should address that?
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah, I'm completely confused.
I really don't.
You guys have to remember me. Remember I went to
court?
No,
no,
we remember
you
your case. And yeah, that has nothing to do with what you just said. Of course we remember you, but I don't know what the hell you just said.
What I just said, calm down, Bridget. What I just said is basically they tried to get my appeal, which is a different case. They tried to get my appeal dismissed. I opposed their motion to dismiss my appeal, and the judge
right, and you prevailed.
Denied
we
their
understand
motion,
that.
But I prevailed.
Yes.
However,
great.
in their answer brief, they're using the same arguments that they used in their motion to dismiss. Like if they reply to my brief, they're using the same arguments that
okay,
was already.
Okay, so what? So use your same arguments. Against them, you're done. You've already won the argument against the dismissal, so you're going to win again on there because they're using that as part of their brief. So what's the big deal?
They're so aggravating, man.
Well,
no,
I know
you
got to
take the emotion out of this.
Yeah,
you got to take the emotion out of this and deal with facts.
What's
yeah,
aggravating about
that emotion come in, and that's going to get you.
Yeah, what's aggravating about them screwing up and giving you an easy opportunity to win?
That's true.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You
got to take the emotion out of this. Everybody, please, don't let yourselves get emotionally involved in this stuff. If you do, set it down. Go do something for 24 hours. Take a break and come back to it with a cooled brow, and then start thinking in terms of facts and law, and then do what you got to do. Don't deal with it when you're dealing with emotion, because you're probably going to make mistakes.
Right, okay. And don't personalize anything. Don't become personally involved and hate the lawyer or hate the judge or do any of that. Negative emotions don't help.
Right,
you know,
it's just business. That's all.
Yeah, I think you're right, because that's actually what got me a little off balance today. I'm trying to serve that last defendant, the same one that I called you guys about 3 weeks ago that I got granted, and I still can't find him.
Well, just keep working at
him.
Well, where there's a will, there's a way. Just go get her done.
Right.
Get her done. Thanks,
that's what
Dave.
You got to do.
All right, you guys, keep up the good work.
All right, you
okay.
too. Keep that emotion out of it, dear. Just calm down. Go take a walk and just take it easy and then come back and think facts and law. Facts and law, okay?
Okay. I bought that book, Dave, that you mentioned.
Yeah, he's not kidding. He makes me go take a walk in the rain.
I've done that with Terry when she gets wound up. So, I'm, you know, anyway, I know what I'm talking about when I say that.
And when I had an attorney that was ducking service like that, and I had an affidavit from the process server that said they were ducking service and sending a bodyguard out to block them, I went ahead and got a friend of mine to send them a certified return receipt service at their office location and a second copy by first class mail, and the court accepted that as substitute service. So you might look at your local rules. Yeah, because you had all the other stuff. You couldn't get them one way. They knew they were going to be served. You got them this way. They should have got their mail one way or the other.
Right, yeah, because I know he's going to be served. I goofed and I gave him a copy of the complaint when I didn't know I had to service him. So,
yeah,
I'm going to try that. Thank you so much.
All right, we got to rock and roll here. Thank you, dear.
Okay, bye-bye. Yes.
Okay, we're going to go to 817. That's the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Good evening.
Hey, guys. It's Keisha.
It is Keisha. And I figured I wouldn't say anything and see if it was. Good evening, dear.
Hello. I have a question. I went to mediation today, and it was a FCRA impermissible credit pull, and it was with Wells Fargo Dealer Services. They pulled my credit twice, and it was like maybe 7 or 9 months apart. And I talked to you guys already about my discovery questions that I sent to them, and they couldn't produce the copies of the application or whatever. So today we're in mediation, and so we're trying to come up with a resolution. So they're like, yes, they agree that they pulled my credit. However, it was electronically sent to them, and so they electronically pull my credit. They don't have any idea or, you know, they don't keep copies. They never have copies of anything related to, like, paperwork with the credit applications or whatever, and that I'm actually going for the wrong people, the wrong company. It should be whoever, the car dealership or whoever it was that sent the application to them, that I should be going after and not them, because they're not in violation.
That's not correct.
No, it's not correct. Who pulled your credit?
I'm trying to figure out who pulled my credit, because they can't give me
Wait a minute, Keisha. You're trying to figure out
I know
who
pulled my credit.
Look at the obvious.
I mean, I know, well, I don't mean it. Let me fix that. Wells Fargo Dealer Services pulled my credit because they're on my credit report twice.
So then they're the only ones who pulled it. What are you concerned about?
No. They're saying that because they received something electronically, that they're not responsible. I'm going after the wrong individuals, because it had to be either the car company or whoever had to send them some information to pull my credit. They don't just pull my credit.
Then they're negligent for letting that happen.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear it. Two people were talking.
Do you have any reason to believe that they're not lying to you?
Yes. So I'm trying to see my question is, like, you know, I mean, obviously I know that they pulled it. They're on my credit report. They sent me the thing saying that they were taking it off. They did take it off, but they don't want to be held responsible, basically. That's
well,
it.
Well, but wait a minute.
You can't unring the bell.
Wait a minute, Keisha. If they were able to get it taken off, didn't they have to be the one that put it on, that caused it to be there?
Right.
You know,
but
I can't pull your credit. Wait a minute. Wait a second. Let me finish. I can't pull your credit, and then Jesse goes to him and says, well, hey, take that credit pull off that Dave did. I'm the only one that can tell him to take the credit pull off that I did. They admitted it right there when they said they were going to get it removed.
I know, and that's what I said. But they said they only did it in good faith, that the potential client that I was going to be, they went ahead and took it off when I sent the letter because
okay.
Because
all right, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, we're trying to schmooze you. Are you going to buy it? Are you going to go away?
I told him that he's going to be getting
We didn't do anything.
Yeah, I told the lawyer, because they had two representatives from Wells Fargo Dealer Services there, and their lawyer was on the phone. So I told the lawyer, I'm going to be sending you an email, basically, because the answer that you gave me with the discovery questions are not, you know, are not, I don't know, remember how I put it. It was so much stuff going on. But they're not acceptable, and they didn't answer the questions that I, you know, asked. And so I need for you to give me what I asked for within the next 7 to 10 days before I do my motion to compel. So they're like, well, it must be a mistaken identity or whatever, but where in the statute, and this is what the lawyer kept asking me, show me in the statute where it says that the creditor is liable if they pull your credit when somebody else applies, even if it was a identity theft. I said, the statute's not set up that way that says the creditor is liable for this particular issue. I said, the statute says that there's a permissible purpose for these reasons, and you guys had none of these reasons after I gave them. So it makes the credit pool impermissible. That's where the violation occurred.
There you go. You show me in the statute where it says that there's an exception for what you're trying to say there is.
And show me in the statute where it says you're supposed to educate the lawyer on the other side.
I was just like, are you kidding? Like, you can't be. But, yeah, he was dead serious in his but I just said, okay, well, since we can't come up with an agreement right now, we can continue going. I'm like, there's plenty of case law that I have to prove my case. So that's fine with me. But what I had was I have a motion to dismiss that was served to me. Well, it wasn't served properly. They filed it electronically, but I'm exempt from ECF. They sent me an email copy of it on August 28th saying this is what they were going to file in the court. However, they never sent me a copy in the mail. So I'm getting my response to the motion to dismiss together so that I can actually file my response because I don't want to be hindsighted, you know, just like, but I sent them an email saying, hey, if that, you know, you sent me an email saying that you were going to file this, but I still haven't received my copy in the mail, per the rules, you know, since I'm ECF exam, are you going to send it? So today I got it in the mail. So now will my days start counting from today since I've just received it in the mail, or is it going to start from the 28th when they gave it to me?
The court is going
to
look at it. The court is going to look at it at the time that they sent it, and you can have a big fight over it, or you can do a motion for enlargement of time to answer because of the fact they failed to serve, and you noticed them, and you didn't actually receive service of the their filing until, you know, September 9th, so you need an additional 14 days to compile and file your response to that. That's what I would do. I wouldn't take a chance, but no, the court's going to look at it from the date that it was filed with them, and then if you want to argue it, then you're going to have a big flap over that, and I don't think it's worth it. I think I just put in for the motion to extend the time to answer and why.
And if you do that,
put it in just make it very short. Don't make any big convoluted thing to them. Just tell them, here's what happened. I didn't get notice of this. I didn't get timely service. Therefore, I need additional time. And I don't think you're going to have any problem.
Okay, I'll do that tomorrow. I just wanted to check because I'm like, I'm trying to respond to this and get it done, but I'm like, I don't want to hurry up and do it and miss something.
Right, exactly.
So, okay.
Yep, that's what I would do. And of course,
right,
I never give legal advice.
Right.
Okay, thank you, dear. All right, we are going to go to 619. 619, you've been unmuted. Well, let's wait a second. I'm going to try it again. Well, wait a second here. The board's jumping around here. Come on. There, finally, 619, you've been unmuted.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Bill Chase in L.A.
How you doing?
Wow. Just another Tuesday night talking to lots of good people around the country.
Great. So here's my question. I actually, I'm getting a TCPA case started that I was going to file actually last year in the summer. I didn't get a chance to file it, so I ended up filing it a couple weeks ago. And I talked to the attorney from the other side. I was actually expecting to talk to a guy named James Duke.
I know Mr. Duke.
I
didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
right?
He said that they use a scrub and this and that, you know, whatever.
Sure they do.
Right, so he did his usual, tried to BS me. I actually expected to talk to him this time around when I actually filed. But I ended up getting another attorney, and I talked to him the other day, I think Thursday last week. And I totally destroyed him, basically, in the conversation. I laid it all out on the line for him. You know, I said, you know, hey, I have nothing to do with that company. I've never had any business with that company. And he went straight to, well, you have no claim when it comes to using auto dialers.
Okay.
You know,
again, what's your question?
So, yeah, what's your question?
Yeah, so I told him straight out that, well, I knew he was going to go there.
So,
I knew he was going to go there, so I just went, you know, I said, hey, well, they have to have the capability, basically.
Yeah,
you know, so,
but what is your
anyway,
question?
So my question is, well, I got about a week and a half before the 21 days is up, and I'm wondering what's you guys' strategy on what's your strategy wise? Would you call them back up and set up a 26
F? What my strategy would be is called wait.
Uh-huh.
They've got so many days left before they got to answer your complaint, right?
Right. About a week and a half.
Well, the ball's in their court, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's
how can you dribble the ball when it's in their court? Leave it alone.
Right.
Because if you go
right.
to them, what are you doing? Are you showing weakness or strength?
No, yeah, I don't plan on calling in yet. I was just, you know,
okay.
I'm just waiting.
Then there's the WAIT in capital letters. End of story.
Okay.
Look, I mean, literally, that's it. That's all the explanation there is. Wait and see what they do. If they're interested in settling, they'll call you and say, well, you know, what about this, what about that? Or they're going to answer the complaint or, you know, put in a motion to dismiss, whatever they're going to do. Just wait till the dance starts.
Waiting
but
is
you don't
a
know. You don't know what the dance is going
to
look like because it hasn't started. So there isn't anything you can do except wait.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. I mean, because these guys, I mean, this guy is totally clueless to the case, and
yeah, well,
I guess there is no more James Duke to deal with.
Well, who knows? You don't know. James Duke is in-house counsel. Maybe this guy is some dope outside that they've hired. You don't know. Unless he told you.
Is. I mean, and during the conversation, he's like, he said something to the effect of, well, I don't really know much about this particular law. And you know, I was like, really?
Oh, man. Jesse, wouldn't you like to hear that a few more times?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. An attorney that admits, well, I don't know too much about this law. Well, good, because I know a lot about it, and I'm going to eat you for lunch.
Exactly.
You're behind his mind.
Yeah, thank you for letting me know that.
All right. Well, we've got to keep moving, but I'm going to make one suggestion. Do your homework on that lawyer, that other one that says he doesn't have a clue. Learn as much as you can about him, you know, what law firm he might be with, if he didn't identify that, all that. Do your homework so you know who you're dealing with other than the obvious dope.
Okay.
Okay?
It sounds like a plan.
Be lying.
Okay. All right. Sit back
all right, great.
And
thanks, guys.
Wait. You bet. You're welcome.
All right.
All right. Okay, we're going to go to 612. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please. Hello, 612. It's like we got some background fuzzy noise.
Yeah, something's going on in there.
Yeah. 612, one more time. If you're not going to talk to us, we're going to move on. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to go to 404. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Okay, I need your expertise. If somebody's saying they have not committed a tortious act in Georgia when they have come from Florida, mailed debt collection to Georgia, can you explain what a tortious act is and how I can use it?
Jesse, Larry, you want to explain that?
It's for FDCPA.
I'm trying to...
A tortious act is basically a violation of your rights or an act of you.
That's more than that, right? There's
no.
There's so many things it can be.
Well, have you ever heard of tortious interference?
Interference,
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Did you look up the definition of this word?
Yes, I have a whole 3 pages on it. But they said they haven't committed a tortious act in Georgia, so they're not liable.
You're really muffled, Sherry. You're really muffled.
Oh.
It's hard to understand.
Yeah, and we keep going over the same thing with you, Sherry. It seems like every week you ask the same question.
No, I haven't asked this one before. I made sure it was a different one.
No, what I'm saying is you keep letting them get away with, well, they didn't go to Georgia and they didn't commit anything. If they served you in Georgia, they've availed themselves, and this is federal, so it doesn't matter what state they did it in.
I just wondered if I could expound on the tortious act. Like I've been affected in Georgia. I don't care when they did it.
It's just a civil wrong.
Are you, by chance, over 60?
Yes.
Well, then you need to go look up. There is a Georgia statute that I just discovered. And it only has to do with if there's an FDCPA, and you got FDCPA in your case?
Yes.
Okay. Then it's also a violation of abuse against the elderly. And that carries...
Terry.
It carries a $10,000 per violation, stackable and treble.
Oh, my gosh. What is the – do you know what the
statute
is?
Yeah, I'll give
it
to you.
I'm also disabled. I'm not only elderly, I'm disabled.
Let Terry give me
an email because I have the complaint. There's a case, Parton versus Midland, and it was filed in magistrate court and just recently in the last week moved up to federal. So the only way you can see the complaint right now is if you send me an email so I can send it to you. I'm trying to open it right now. The statute number on that is just a second here. Stupid slow computer.
You're a jewel, Terry.
$10,000. Holy
crap. Terry has been very busy this past week, and she has uncovered some incredible material.
Well, this is really awesome. By engaging the actions and failures to act set forth, Supra, in violation of the FPBA and FDCPA, Midland also violated the Unfair or Deceptive Practices Toward the Elderly and Disabled Act, UDPTEAS, Georgia, as stated in OCGA Section 10-1-851.
Section 10-1-851.
As a result of those actions and inactions, plaintiff Parton is entitled to her actual damages, additional civil penalties up to $10,000 per each violation, to punitive damages under OCGA Section 10-1-851, and to reasonable attorney's fees pursuant to Georgia Statute 10-1853.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
I finally find something in Georgia. One thing about Georgia, they value their women and their old people, and we're both.
That's right.
That's pretty good, Terry. That's really good.
I mean, that's like pulling a needle out of a
haystack. Terry was literally bouncing off the walls when she found that.
And you know what? It was a complete accident. That was the last case in the list of 14 actions that have been filed in federal court this year against Midland. And I wasn't going to open it because it was just filed last week, and I thought, man, I'm wasting my 10 cents on Pacer. It probably hasn't even been served. And something was telling me, open it. And when I did, there was no complaint there. It said move from other court, but didn't say what court. So I backed out to the page before, and I clicked on attorneys, and voila, lower half of the page had the docket from the lower court, and the first entry in it was the civil cover page. And when I clicked on that, it gave me the complaint.
Wow.
That's how I found that.
You said that you
but we
got
to keep moving here, guys. We can't talk too much on this. So send an email to Terry so she can send that to you, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's awesome.
All right. That take
good
care
fine,
of you.
Terry.
Yep. That is good. Yeah. All right. We're going to go to 276. I just got to get Jeff to move his boom.
Oh, hello, sorry. This is David from Virginia. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can. Good
yes,
evening.
Good evening. This is my first time on. Just today I was invited by a friend to join this conference. So I don't know just what for questions you all entertain, but here's my question. So last evening me and my family were happily going down the road to the county fair. Going through a fairly straight stretch of road, just across on the road, and here come these blinking blue lights behind me. And so got pulled over, and he asked for my driver's license. He said I was going 51 in a 30, and I told him no thank you, and he insisted, and, you know, we had our conversation, but all the things that I had gathered, that I had been taught to say, he just ignored it, and he said, if you don't give me your driver's license, I'm going to have you arrested. So I gave it to him, he wrote me up, and so I'm inviting your advice. What would you do?
Jesse, I'm going to let you hit that one head on.
Yeah, we don't deal with any of that. All we deal with is debt-related issues.
Okay.
So I don't know why your friend would have sent you here for dealing with police, because we don't mess with that stuff.
Okay. Well, sorry, I didn't know that. So
no, that's fine.
No, welcome aboard anyway, but the point is that we have nothing to do with police officers.
Yeah, and I will add one little quick side note to that. Is the other stuff that all these people were telling you about what to do when you get stopped by a cop and everything is all administrative stuff, and I think you just had a terrific lesson last night that it doesn't work. So don't use it. It sounds wonderful, sounds like you should be able to do it, and maybe you should, but they're not going to pay attention to it, and it can likely bring you far more trouble than any benefit that you'd get out of it. So from our experience, we're very aware of that stuff that's going on. Our very strong suggestion to you, and when I say ours, I know the others on this call, the other moderators and Jesse agree with me.
That's right.
Just get away from that. Leave it alone. It'll make more trouble than it'll ever give you any benefit. That's just a suggestion.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Sorry we couldn't help you on that. It's just out of our realm of what we deal with. Okay, let's go to 702. 702, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we sure
can. Oh, yeah.
How are you doing tonight?
Okay, I'm great. This is some guy in Las Vegas. I think you remember me. Okay, right to the point. Number one, thank you very much, guys. You got me about $4,200 in a couple of cases over the last year. I haven't talked to you guys since about April or so, but I'm kind of going back and forth with an attorney on an impermissible pull. And I remember hearing something about a case that I think Queen Bee had talked about. But basically, I know that Pinto says that the creditor does not have the right to obtain a credit report of a consumer in determining the likelihood of collecting a debt unless the debt was arisen out of a transaction for which the consumer actively sought or had been reduced to a judgment. So I look at that as talking about the original creditor, not the collection agency, and the collection agency only has the right to pull a credit report if he's collecting on a judgment. But I was thinking that I heard something about a couple of cases that had been adjudicated here in Las Vegas in reference to the impermissible pull. Can you guys help me out?
Well, I would like to correct something you just said there. A collector can have a permissible purpose if he is and can prove, and he, I say by they, okay, that they are doing so to review an account on behalf of the creditor.
Okay.
There
does that
is,
include debt buyers?
Debt buyers are different. They never have a permissible purpose except for once, and that is to assess the account before they purchase it. Once they've purchased it, they cannot be pulling your credit on behalf of a creditor, and they are not a creditor themselves. Therefore, they have no permissible purpose whatsoever. But if you go, and I believe it's on the website, the Senate, Gary, look for 40 years experience with the FCRA. It's an FTC publication. And go to page 44 and read there, and that will clarify all of that for you.
Okay, so this is in the in the back office. I look for 40 years. What was that, 40 years?
It called 40 years experience with the FTC or the FCRA. It's the FTC's interpretation of the FCRA.
Yeah, and you could actually find that on the web just by Googling that as well.
Yeah, you can. And it's page 44 where your relevant text is going to be, and that will clarify. And there is a case called Capetta versus GC Services. That was 2009. Where was that, Dave? Alabama?
Ninth Circuit.
Okay. And that was a really good ruling on impermissible purpose and the fact that the BA3A, which is where they always claim to have permissible purpose, does not apply to them. That's CAPETTA versus GC Services.
GC as in a good car, huh?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okie dokie. Thank you again very much for your help.
You're very welcome. Glad to have you with us again. Don't be such a stranger.
Alrighty. I'm telling you, I need to get more money.
Well, hey, there's no such thing as too much money.
No.
Well, as we say here in Las Vegas, we need to get into their assets.
That's yeah, right. There you go. All righty. Let's go to 919. Well, wait a second here. The board jumped there again. That's irritating when that happens. Okay, 919, you've been unmuted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
So, I'm doing all right. This is Sean, North Carolina, the Texas Guaranteed case. Called you guys a couple weeks ago in reference to the weasel tactics of trying to get out of answering interrogatories, and they sure as hell did exactly that. They objected on the interrogatories for grounds of untimeliness. The interrogatories were sent out on the 7th. Close of discovery was the 21st, and I filed a motion to compel. I haven't heard anything. I filed a motion for an extension on the 21st, and then I filed a motion to compel because they answered the interrogatories the next day, objecting to all of it. But what I found odd after I filed the motion to compel was I received a phone call from University of Phoenix because they had received a subpoena from Texas to try to get my student records. And the reason why they called me was because they received the subpoena, and it was dated for September 19th. But then they received a request from the defense attorney for them to expedite the results of the subpoena. And they said that they couldn't do that unless they had the student's permission, which is why they called me. And I'm finding that the complete bad faith act. I mean, if you're saying that you're not going to answer my interrogatories that you had for 14 days on the grounds of untimeliness, how is it on, I think it was the 25th of August, that they made the request to University of Phoenix to expedite the subpoena?
How many days before the end of discovery? Yours was 14, but you haven't said how many days theirs was. You're throwing out dates. We're not keeping track of the dates. Just give me dates.
Okay. The 7th was the day that I filed. The 7th of August was the day that I filed the interrogatory.
I understand that. You keep giving us days. I don't care about dates. You said that they filed a motion for untimeliness for 14 days, yet how many days did they ask for the expedited discovery from Phoenix? So you can rebut them. That's all that matters.
Oh, well, the first subpoena they sent out was – it was basically gave them 30 days to answer the subpoena. It was a little bit more – because they sent out the first subpoena on the 12th
okay,
of August.
Okay, so that's fair. That's okay, 30 days. That's fine.
But that's the thing. If you refuse to answer my interrogatories on the grounds of untimeliness because they had them for 14 days and refused to answer them, which they should have filed an extension for or you know motion to – enlargement of time to answer.
Well, here's the problem. Depending on your local rules, the federal rules require 30 days prior to the close. Am I correct, John? Larry? So
yeah,
if you
rules
give them
in days.
Listen to me. If the close of discovery is 30 days from today, I got to have my discovery in today. I can't wait 15 days from now and then give them 15 days to answer.
Actually,
yeah, but
they get 30 plus 3.
Yeah,
yeah,
but there's a twist there, guys.
I filed for the extension myself because I recognized that that was a mistake on my behalf because, I, you know, as far as
understood.
I knew.
But did the judge award you that extension?
I haven't heard anything back from the courts on anything. What I was
okay
about to do on a suggestion from one of my partners was to withdraw the motion to compel and refile the motion to compel with the new information, because if they're saying that they didn't have to answer my interrogatories because they weren't they were untimely and discovery is over, why 5 days after discovery is over did they file a subpoena? Discovery's over. You shouldn't be subpoenaing anything.
Yeah. Well, you can't say, oh, well, you did something wrong, so, or I did
right
something wrong, so you don't get to do it. It doesn't work that way. The rules are the rules. And,
well, hold on,
you know,
guys. There's a twist there. Did you catch the fact that they responded in one day?
Yeah.
They basically waived their 30 days. They don't need it. They don't want it. They're not asking for it. So I don't see any reason he can't file a motion to compel.
Based he did.
On the fact
he said he did, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
but
did to compel, but I didn't hear anything back from that yet. But the day after I filed the motion to compel, I received a call from University of Phoenix stating that the defense attorney wanted them to
right
expedite whatever the subpoena
that's
was requesting.
It's completely irrelevant. The
yeah
point
yeah
is they've already responded to your request for interrogatory. Was it just interrogatories or was it production too and admissions?
The admissions and productions I sent out first, they answered those in a timely manner. I waited for the answers from that to draw up my interrogatories, and that's what kind of took a little bit longer than I anticipated, which is
yeah
why.
Well, now you know you can't do that.
Say again?
But you can't do that, obviously, because you messed up your timelines. However,
right,
and I've never seen a situation like this, they really screwed up by answering your interrogatories one day later.
Yeah, but the answer, granted, I understand what you're saying, Larry, but their answer was simply, you're past time and we don't have to answer them.
But he's not past time.
Of the close of
the time expires
before they're required to respond, but they've already responded. That's why this is a tricky situation. I've never seen this happen before, and I don't know what the judge is going to rule.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait and see what the judge gives you as far as guidance goes on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been about 2 weeks since, about 2 weeks since I filed the extension, and then about a week and a half, 2 weeks, roughly, that I filed the motion to compel afterwards. Because basically I filed the extension not having an answer from them at all. And then they answered that day, filed it, and so a couple of days later I filed the motion to compel because they did a blanket objection to everything.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the rest of the guys here, but I think you're in a hurry-up-and-wait situation and see what kind of guidance you get from the court and then go from there as far as maybe making any arguments to that, if it's unfavorable to you. I don't see any other thing that that he could do at this point. Do you guys, Larry, Jesse, John?
No, other than respond to their motion and just point out, which the court is obviously going to realize, that they're asking for the same thing that they're telling you you can't have.
Exactly. That's where I was confused by it, because it said, you know, if you're objecting to timeliness, how dare you ask them to expedite these records? Because according to them, they said to me, we're not answering this because discovery is over. Because I actually called them before I filed the motion to compel, because that's what the rules say to do. You need to contact the opposing party and try and resolve. I did that, and they basically bucked back at me and said, no, we're not supplementing anything. Discovery is over. You will just deal with the motion to compel when it comes. And I'm like, okay, that was kind of nasty the way that she talked to me, but you know, I was just like, whatever. So I filed the motion to compel, and I just haven't heard anything back. So, and then I got the new information from University of Phoenix because they sent me a letter in reference to this because they needed my approval to release it before September 9th.
Oh. Are you inclined to give it to them or not?
No, I told them no. I told them don't do it at all. She even
told
me to file a motion to quash the subpoena because it wasn't timely. And that's part of why I brought this up, too, because the two suggestions that were made to me was to file a motion to quash the subpoena, and the other one is to file withdraw the original compel motion and file a new compel motion with the new information showing that they're acting in bad faith.
They're not acting in bad faith.
No.
They're just trying to get away with what they can. That's not bad faith.
Yeah.
They're trying to do
just,
this thing that you're
they're acting like lawyers, typical people.
you need to decide whether or not you want to increase the chances that the subpoena is going to be allowed, at the same time increase the chances that they have to answer your interrogatories. Because it's almost certain the judge is going to rule the same way on both. I don't see any other option.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, about all we can come up with for you on this. We got more people in the queue, and we got to keep going here.
Okay, no problem.
So, all righty. Thank you. Let us know what happens on that going forward. I'd be interested to see what the judge does on that.
I'll let you know.
Okay. Thanks a lot. All right. We're going to go to 708. 708, you've been unmuted.
Hi, everybody. It's Rodney.
Hey,
Rodney.
I had a feeling that was Mr. Rodney.
It's been a while. Just wanted to give everybody an update. I did conclude my Chase case and walked away with $3,000.
Awesome,
there
man.
You go. Good.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, it was my first time going through mediation, and it was – I'd never been through it, so I didn't know, but the judge was walking between the courtroom and the attorney's conference room where I sat with my pro se attorney. And bottom line, she felt and said honestly, if you were to go to trial, you're not going to win this case. And
who said that?
She said it. She said flat out. Because
you said she. Who's she?
She being the judge.
Okay, so the judge ran your mediation?
The judge, magistrate judge, ran the mediation.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, no, I've seen that before, Jesse. We've had different people that have had that. Same thing. The judge will either the people will shuttle in and out of the courtroom or the judge will move back and forth between them. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it was real interesting, and it lasted, God, 3.5 hours.
Yeah, yeah. But you got $3,000. That's $1,000 an hour. That ain't too bad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm
did she tell you why she did she tell you why she thought you weren't going to win it?
Yeah, she said basically because this isn't a debt collector where you would probably have a better case. This is the original creditor. And you're not denying that the credit cards were yours and the debt was yours. So she said, I just want to remind you that they have 7 years statute of limitation. They can still come after you for those two charge cards that you defaulted on. It doesn't matter if you closed it or they closed it. So I'm just giving you my advice. You're not going to win this if you don't settle here today. And at this point, what you're looking for is, I was asking for $8,000. She said they're not going to go above three. They're sticking real hard on that point. And if I could give you the extra money, I would. I'm just saying I think this needs to come to a close.
She did you a favor.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. I would agree. And my attorney looked at me and said, seriously, dude, you're out of running room. You've negotiated for 3.5 hours. So,
wow.
I said, okay, I'll take
it. Hey, you gave it your best shot, and you got what you got. You know, you didn't walk out of there with a sharp stick in your eye. You walked out of there with $3,000.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is not a bad outcome.
And she left me with one warning. She said, I see you've got a lengthy trial record behind you, all settlements except for one, which was Safeco. She said, I would be cautious if I were you as a pro se creating a reputation of suing people at the drop of a hat. And I said, I'll take it under advisement, Your Honor, but if they are violating me, that's what the statutes are for. She says,
and what'd she say then?
No, she just says, okay, I'm just forewarning you. It's not a good picture for a pro se to keep suing people. I said, well, I'll take my chances.
And that's
right.
Well,
she's right. That judges don't like that. I can tell you from personal experience.
Larry knows for sure.
Yeah, they definitely don't like that. So
But see, the correct answer would have been, is, Your Honor, are you encouraging me to not stand up for my rights?
Yeah.
Isn't that the opposite of what you represent?
Yeah.
That's what you should have said to her.
Yeah. It was
too late now, though. But good job, Rodney. You got some money, like you said, better than a sharp stick in the eye, right, Dave?
Yeah.
So you're good.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you go and you make your best effort, you make your best fight, and then figure out what's the best outcome, take it, and then toddle on down the road.
Exactly.
That's
now,
right.
Bank of America, my federal case was put on a stay. They did the Colorado River Doctrine. It's 10 points to that doctrine, and the judge stated that they met at least 7 and that he would at least refrain from any decision on this case until after my state foreclosure has settled. And then he said, and by what I can tell and what has been submitted, you are at the motion to dismiss stage. So just go handle your business, and I'll see you in 1 week. You've got 7 days after you settle up with the guys downstairs to come back upstairs to me. And I was like, okay. And he said it like that. The attorneys looked like you just told him he's at the motion to dismiss stage. And the judge says, well, for pro se fighting both state and federal cases and looking at what he's done over the years, I think he already knows where he's at.
There you go.
So with that,
how's that for a warning shot across the bow for those guys?
Yeah, man.
He knows
good.
Where he's at. So he said he's already in 2 rounds of discovery. I think the guy knows where he's at. So, you know, I'm calling it like
that. Now, Rodney, just and everybody, take note there. One judge is telling him he needs to be careful as a pro se and not be suing everybody at the drop of a hat. And then here's another judge that's saying, this guy knows what he's doing, and he's right on top of things. Look at him. You lawyers, you need to pay attention. So there, you got a complete contradiction of two jurists and their comments about him.
Exactly. So I'm finishing up on my last round of request to admit, and we're considering, because I've got a guy that's helping me, a counterclaim. So just wanted to give you guys an update. I don't really have any questions tonight. I just wanted to share my good news.
Okay.
Awesome,
great.
Man.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Good job.
Take care, everybody.
You too. All right. We're going to go to 858. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a question for Jesse.
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to find out, I have on my properties, my statute of limitations is up October 3rd, and I wanted to know if there's anything I should look into that would help benefit me regarding that.
Well, that depends on where you're at. Have they tried to foreclose? Have they not tried to foreclose? Are you in foreclosure? You know, what's the status?
They've left me alone because I had lawsuits against them back in 2010, or 2011, actually. And ever since that, I went through appeals and everything. Everything has been left, and they haven't bothered me.
Hmm. What state are you in?
Texas.
That I don't know. Have you done the checking with the public records to see the title or the assignments, the transfers? Are they there? The current servicer, are they there in public record, or is it still the old? See, you just got to do that background check, and then that's how you make that determination. You can't just go off the cuff. You got to be very careful with that.
Okay, well, there's a few that don't have any assignments at all. And then
a few? What do you mean a few? You locked me there.
Well, I mean a few because there's multiple properties.
Oh, okay. Well, focus on one.
So some have assignments and other ones have none.
Okay, the ones that have none, obviously, you can quiet the title on. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. What I do suggest is you find yourself a good attorney that does good quiet title.
Okay.
Because the reality is you're going to serve whoever's a public record. Right? Make sense?
That would be the original lender that's showing up on the deed.
Whoever's there. I don't know. Whoever's there. If they're not in business anymore, then how are they ever going to answer anything?
They are in business.
Okay. So what is their answer going to be?
We no longer have it.
Yeah, we have no interest in the outcome of this litigation. I can almost bet you that's what their answer is going to be.
Okay.
You see? And then once that's done, then that's it. They can't say, oh, we assigned it to somebody, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so. That's not too relevant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see where that's going?
Yep.
So that's how you handle it. But you didn't hear that from me.
Okay. That's what I thought on that. And then the other ones where, you know, it's a pitch podge where they did a corporate assignment.
right.
By MERS, and then that was it. That was done way back in 2011, I believe. And then that same thing is then nothing else has happened after that. Oh, they did substitution of trustees, but that's it. That's all that shows up on the record.
Yeah, that I'd have to look at all that stuff. So I really don't know. I can't tell you one way or another on that. It's kind of tough.
Okay.
But your other ones are good.
Care of you?
And I will just say this, that you're probably in no different shape than you are with the other ones we just discussed. It's just a matter of having to, you know, isolate it. That's all. Figure it out.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
All
sweet.
Right. Thank you. All right. We're going to go back.
All right.
Let's see. 817. Did you have another question? Keisha, I think that's you. 682. Did you have another question or not? Evidently not.
We can't let Keisha ask any more questions. We're done.
No. Yeah. We're going to be there pretty soon here. All right. We're going to go back, see if we got another question at 404. 404, you got another question for us or not?
Yeah, I have a quick one.
Okay.
Remember I talked about the deposition they got the judge to agree to at the hearing when we were in all those things I was going to do? You know the judge...
Not really, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you're giving me some really good suggestions about what you would do. Anyway, the judge has never signed the order, and I sent them a email. I didn't want to bring their attention to the fact that the judge hadn't signed the order yet. So I sent him an email saying that here is my doctor's note. Obviously, I cannot travel to Florida, and it violates statute 95.121, whatever, and rules of procedure. And I'm sure you're aware of that as an attorney, so just letting you know that I won't be there. Well, you know, and I sent her a copy of the doctor's note. She sends me back a copy of the letter to the judge with the proposed order, no signature on it, and that's it.
Yeah,
I had
so.
I was going to do a motion, a protective order, a motion to quash. And then we realized there was no signed order, so what am I quashing?
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean to be funny. I'm like, what do you care about? And now with what you just found out from Terry, that could be construed as, you know, a pretty nasty modus operandi from these people. And, you know, you know. I don't have to say nothing.
Yeah,
Terry just explained it. So
well,
you're in pretty damn good shape.
Well, I was just saying because, you know, the games they've been playing and the tricks they pull, should I throw it in or not? But see, right now I'm at the point of my motion to dismiss is for not doing proper service, so I don't want to go any further.
No, yeah, and then focus on what you want to focus on, Sherry.
Okay. I just thought maybe since you're used to Florida rules and the games that would you do anything
no,
to protect
games.
Yourself?
It's, everything's games out here, you know. Even when they're doing it legit, it's a game. So.
Yeah, and all the games they play all have a certain number of different rules to them. There's no two of them that are the same either. So
exactly.
So gotta,
I wouldn't worry,
keep,
sweetheart.
Take each one individually.
Okay. All right.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Again, guys. Okay.
All right.
Sure.
All right. We're going to go to 954.
I heard that, Jesse.
That's good. Your speaker is working on your headset.
Hello.
954, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Good.
How are you?
Okay. I have a question.
I hope so.
I sued. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. A few years back, I sued Wells Fargo Home Mortgage for a FDCPA violation. They foreclosed on me. I amended my complaint, and basically we settled. We had a mediation hearing, and we agreed to modify my loan. And the term of the loan with the settlement agreement was I didn't have to pay escrow. I would be responsible for my own taxes and my own insurance.
Okay.
So that's what I've been paying my principal and interest only. I just got a notice of intent to foreclose from them. Now my question is, did they violate the settlement agreement by sending me that notice?
That's a very, very loaded question.
What's the basis of the notice to foreclose?
I'm sorry, you guys came in broken up.
What is the basis of their notice to foreclose? Why are they doing it? What are they alleging?
Because I'm back due on escrow. Because I haven't paid any escrow to them.
Well, that's still part of your agreement, that you would pay it. So if you don't
pay
it
on my own,
so it doesn't matter how you would pay it. You said you would pay it. You haven't paid it. That's a violation of the mortgage. Now they can come in and say, so you're asking me if they violated when, in fact, you're the one who's violated the agreement.
Well,
wait
a second, Jesse. Wait a second. You may be assuming something here. I just want to clarify something because I'm not clear on something. You, in that agreement, it was that you didn't have to pay into escrow, but you would take care of the taxes, insurance,
on my own.
It would
be my responsibility to provide insurance and pay my insurance and pay my taxes.
Yeah, okay. Now, the question, have you done that?
Everything was paid off until August 25th.
Okay. Everything was made off until
getting insurance because they're going back saying from the beginning of the modification, which was June 15th.
Of what year?
Of this year. Everything started, the modification started on June 15th this year.
Oh,
okay.
So this is all just in the last 60 days?
Yeah, it's all new. It's all new. My question is, though, do you think I violated the terms of the agreement?
Well, if you didn't keep – are your taxes – you just said you didn't pay them, Dave. That's why I told him.
Well, they're not due. Nothing was due. That's why.
So when is it due?
The taxes are due in November.
Okay, and why – then what are they saying? What is the basis of the letter? You said it's because the taxes weren't paid.
They basically said that they can't honor my agreement because the rate – of the debt to the mortgage wasn't, they couldn't honor it.
Well, they made an agreement. They're bound by contract if they made an agreement, are they not?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They have it in writing.
Their letter to me was the loan-to-value ratio is 80% or greater for the primary residence. Therefore, the escrow account is required. That's the letter they sent me, and then they're starting to attempt to collect that debt.
Well, then the problem that you're facing is they have violated their agreement.
Yes.
So all you have to do is send them back and say, I could care less about this letter. This is what you agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me now that you're not going to agree to it so I can seek legal counsel? Either way, just tell me yes or no.
Okay. That's what I just wanted to make sure I was right with that.
That's a breach of an agreement, see?
Yeah. They violated the terms and conditions of the settlement agreement. That's basically what
I'm talking about. That's right. And that in itself creates a whole other violation for you to sue them under.
Now,
you agree, Larry?
My question now
yes.
with this is, can I go back and sue them for the previous lawsuit? Can I? Because we dismissed our cases without prejudice.
Based
can
on
I
the fact that you came to an agreement. So what
yes,
you're saying is, let me go to the court, I'm going to tell the judge, and I'm going to reopen this case because they violated the terms of the agreement. And I would say you probably could. I'd have
mm-hmm.
to leave that one to Larry. He's probably a little better
mm-hmm.
knowledgeable than that. But wouldn't you think you mm-hmm. could, Larry, based on that?
If I were in that position, I would just hang tight and let them hang themselves. They're not only violating
mm-hmm.
the contract, they're also violating FDCPA,
mm-hmm.
trying to collect what you don't owe.
Because mm-hmm. I was thinking about paying it and showing the court that I'm attempting to resolve this in good faith, and they are the ones who are violating it.
I don't know why you'd want to do that.
Oh,
why
right,
would
just,
you want to pay
why,
something into the court that isn't owed right now? You said there was nothing owed, so there'd be nothing to pay
mm-hmm.
into the court, right?
Okay.
And you, at the same time, you'd also be acquiescing to the contract that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's my other concern.
You'd be
other concern with
remaking the contract or saying that their what they're saying is right, even though in writing it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah,
okay.
One
I
quick question
that.
For you, if I may, is you do mm-hmm. have a written documents of that settlement.
Sure.
Copies.
Sure, I have
okay.
that. I have the settlement agreement. I have the mediation report.
Okay. Good.
Everything.
Good.
I want to share one last thing with you guys. I've been a member for about 4 years, and I've done this, and I went to a mediation hearing with the foreclosure and my case. And after the mediation hearing, the mediator came up to me and said, I've been an attorney for 30 years and a mediator for 11 years, and I've never seen anyone do what you have just done to these people. And this is Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. And this is all
awesome.
Because of following your steps. I've been
That's
following
awesome.
Your webinars and everything, and it's all because of the work
yeah.
of well, just following the steps that you guys have given me.
It's all up to you, not us. We can just put the information out there. Do you know how many people have our
yep.
information do nothing with it?
Mm-hmm.
So pat yourself on the back, brother. You did good.
Yes. Congratulations.
So Larry's right.
That,
so you have, Larry's absolutely correct. Let me make
mm-hmm.
– hold on, Dave. Let me clear this up for him. So Larry just
mm-hmm.
touched base, but it's true. If you have an agreement –
Mm-hmm.
and they are trying to collect money
mm-hmm.
that's not entitled to collect,
mm-hmm.
then they're in violation of the FDCPA.
Mm-hmm.
And what state are you in?
I'm in Florida. I'm in Broward County, Florida.
Oh, then you got the FCCPA, FDCPA.
Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is just going to start all over again.
Well, you're just sending me a letter threatening to collect a debt
mm-hmm.
that you're not entitled to collect. And
mm-hmm.
I have the agreement that says so.
I have everything. And it's in both
parts. So I
want to
make sure that we
effect.
Emphasize that. Because Larry, I didn't even think of that. Larry did. I'm like, shit, he's right. Larry's absolutely right.
Yeah.
All right.
So just think about that.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just want to make, you know, that's why I wanted to call you guys. All right. I appreciate
okay.
your time, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Great job. Thank you.
Yeah. It is awesome.
Yeah. That is cool. All right, we're going to go to 305, and this is 305-439. Do you have another question for us?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, cool. Calm down. What you guys just told the guy, basically, is if they're trying to collect contracts that's not theirs, that's a violation of the FDCPA?
Well, no, that's not what we said. Not even close. But
okay.
What you just said is a violation because if you're trying to collect on a contract that's not yours, then you're obviously trying to collect on a debt you're not entitled to collect on.
Okay, hold that. Hold that thought right there. Remember when I said before earlier that in appeals they did a motion for attorney's fees and they're stipulating that it's a part of their the contract that I have with them that I'm supposed to pay their attorney's fees. However, that contract that they're referring to does not have their name anywhere on it. It's not with them. Can I go after them for that, although I'm in a...
Yes, Larry, wouldn't you at this point send a dispute and demand for validation?
Yep.
I'm excited. So do you think, Larry, I should probably just don't do anything with that motion to dismiss, let them hang themselves, do the validation and just go leave it from there?
What do you mean don't do anything with their motion to dismiss?
Like,
you have to answer it.
No, not motion to dismiss. I'm sorry, I'm excited.
That's the problem. You have to slow down.
This is good news for me.
You got to slow down so that when you say things that you're giving us correct information. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be dealing with erroneous information. So calm down, please.
You're right.
We like
okay.
enthusiasm, but you got to stay rational.
Okay. I know. Okay. What I'm understanding, they submitted a motion for attorneys during appeals. So what I should do is do a dispute letter to them, or okay,
yeah.
And prove that I would owe you that, yeah.
Oh, this is nice.
It seems to me that you had stated during your presentation earlier on that they had filed a similar motion into a lower court, and the court had denied it.
Yes, they filed the similar motions with the same court, with the appeals court, and the appeals denied it. But in turn, they still had to do a reply to the appeal. The reply to the appeal, like the reply to the brief, has all the same content on their motion to dismiss. In addition to their reply, they also submitted a motion for attorney's fees. Based on the contract.
Did anybody understand what she just said?
No.
Yeah, I understand what she... Well, submitted a motion along with it for attorney's fees.
Well, isn't she... Aren't they collaterally stopped on that because they've already been denied that once?
I don't know. I don't have enough information. I haven't seen documents, so I can't answer that. There's too much we don't know. You've given us a general overview of things. We just don't have enough details who's done what.
Actually, what I just said is everything in a nutshell. That's everything in a nutshell.
Well,
they tried to dismiss the appeal. It can't get any simpler. They tried to dismiss the appeal. They couldn't get the appeal dismissed, so they did an answer brief to the they did an answer to my brief. Within their answer,
they did an answer to the appeal, and then they're asking for attorney's fees.
Right, but
right?
No. I want you guys to understand what I'm saying because I'm calm now. I can explain it better. I'm leveled.
Well, you need to do it real quick here because we're just about out of time. So you got about 30 seconds.
Okay, I'll get to
you. Literally, you better talk fast.
What is you guys aren't going to be able to answer?
Well.
Okay.
Then
with the answer that they did to the brief, it contains information that's in the motion to
we understand
that was denied. Okay.
We understand
as well,
that.
They also, along with their brief, they also did a motion for attorney fees claiming to have a contract with me, but they do not.
We understand that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm understanding, what I should do is go ahead and reply to their answer brief with the same arguments that I did on their motion to dismiss, as well as send them a notice what is it called?
Their validation
letter,
yeah,
regarding the motion to the attorney's
fees. For attorney's fees.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's all
it.
I have to do.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. We've got one more caller. Yep. We've got one more caller that was going to call back, and we'll take that real quick, and that's actually going to run us a little bit over. But it's somebody Jesse told her to call back.
Yep.
And that's 305-454.
Okay, I'll try to make mine quick. I did go and look at the statute, the 559.71, which is the 30 days. They did notify me. They notified me of the transfer on February 15th. The assignment was done, was signed on March 4th and recorded with the county on March 17th. So that statute, the only thing that I can think of, it could apply to the first assignment from MERS to Chase, at which time I did not get notification of that assignment. Would that be safe to say?
No. They notified you of a transfer, right?
Yes.
But then did the transfer, it seems almost 3 weeks to a month after that.
It actually, they notified me February 4th, 5th. They sent the letter out. I think I got a couple of days later. It says, notice assignment, sale, or transfer of servicing rights. Then on March...
Okay, that's servicing rights. So go ahead.
Okay. On March 4th, they signed an assignment.
Of what?
Signing it from Chase to Bayview.
Okay. Again, what is that assignment? Assignment of mortgage?
Assignment of mortgage, yes.
Okay. And then when did they file foreclosure?
May 5th.
May 5th. So
that's about 60 days.
Yeah, well, think about what just happened.
Okay.
They assigned the rights to the servicing.
Okay, yes.
Not ownership.
Okay.
You got to distinguish this. So I gave Dave Mack a right to service your loan. I didn't transfer it over as owner. Here, Dave, you bought it. The letter specifically says notice of sale, transfer, assignment of servicing rights. Not ownership of the note.
No. No. But see, I have – the letter came from M&T Bank, and the person, the entity that filed the lawsuit was Bayview. So M&T Bank states that they're the servicer now, but in their correspondence they tell me they have partial owner interest in the property. So how do I tie everything together – in my motion.
That's up to you. I can't tell you how to do that. I would not know. I'd have to look at all your documents. I'm just saying from what you've told me, they're saying that they sold or transferred the servicing rights. Does that give them the right to foreclose? They're just a servicer. They're not the owner.
So then that's what I should focus on, because that's exactly what the documents say, that
yeah, the documents say that. They don't say anything else.
Yeah. So they don't really have ownership because they're just transferring their rights to service it.
Servicing rights.
Yeah. Servicing rights.
So now you got to look at the foreclosure. What does the foreclosure say?
The foreclosure say that it doesn't state that they're the owners, they simply say that they're the holders of the note and that the note has been assigned to them virtue an assignment dated March 4th.
Does it? Okay. So they're just a holder.
That's what it sounds looks like to me. Now, and
yeah,
I did
holder in due course. What is it?
No, they don't claim that they're
holder with
due
the force. Yeah, well, see, those are things that have to be that are questionable. Are you the holder? Because I can be the holder.
Hold on. They do say that they're the holder in due course. Hold on one second. They say that they are the holder of that note. That's exactly
yeah
their words. Plaintiff is
yeah,
the
holder does not necessarily give you the right to enforce it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So
Jesse can hold it, but that doesn't mean that the owner of
yeah
it has given him the rights to go and foreclose on somebody. If they are the holder with right of
enforcement. Just the right
in due course.
Right of enforcement.
There must be a holder in due course is what I have on my
yeah
note. Okay.
Yeah.
So in due course, in order for them to be in due course, they would have to have the proper assignments.
Correct. And what they have is a standard old nonsense assignment. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay, there's your arguments. There's one of your good arguments right there.
Okay, so that they're okay. So I was kind of right because that's where I was going with, because they J.P. Morgan, which is the entity that assigned it to Bayview, they were not the owners. They were a servicer. Now, my question is, I have a letter from J.P. Morgan Chase.
This is your last question.
They have acquired the servicing rights for Washington Mutual, which that's who the mortgage
well
was with.
They acquired the servicing rights. It doesn't say ownership of the note, does it?
So my question to you, can I bring that letter from J.P. Morgan Chase to my motion to dismiss hearing and present it before the court?
No. You have to include it in your response. You can't just bring it up if it's outside the response.
Well,
and again, that would be an affirmative defense. You need to understand the difference between an affirmative defense and a motion to dismiss. The subject matter of each is completely different.
Okay.
You've got to get this clear in your head. What
okay
is the defect in the complaint? What are the defects within the four corners of the complaint? You can't go outside that. Affirmative defense is, hey, listen, you don't have the right to foreclose. I'm going to sue you in federal court under the FDCPA because you're using false and deceptive means or you're attempting to collect a debt you don't have the right to. Here's the proof. Chase acquired servicing rights. Bayview says they acquired it now. MT Bank said, you see what I mean? Whole different subject matter. What's defective in the complaint itself? Was the note not attached? Was the assignment not attached? Was a copy of the mortgage not attached? What is the issue in the four corners of that complaint? Was it not verified? Who verified the complaint? Those are all issues for dismissal. Broken title is not an issue for dismissal.
Okay, so if I would go ahead and question the verification because it was verified by Bayview, and Bayview really doesn't have no ways to verify as they were not the original person.
Remember
in the
that the drunk, okay, the Supreme Court of Florida has allowed the drunk at the park sleeping on the bench to scribble something, and that's good enough. So don't be disappointed. You're not going to win your motion to dismiss. I guarantee it. I'll buy you dinner if you do.
Okay. Well,
it's not going to happen.
I'm not expecting to, but I do want to go ahead and bring a strong argument. And
yeah, of course. But you have to have a strong argument that is related to the four corners of the complaint itself. It's not verified. The person who verified can't verify a third party's records. Meaning, what are they verifying? They're verifying something for Chase, for WAMU, For MT? What, who are the, how can they verify that? See, you're going to lose anyway. Because the judge, like I said, the drunk at the park can verify. Done. That's all. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Okay? Remember, the banks own our courts. Just remember that. Always. So there's no disappointment. Yeah. You can't be disappointed. I told you, and you've been on these calls before, that your strongest defense is a good offense. You should have already filed a lawsuit with the little bit of information you have in federal court against all of them. And you haven't done it.
No,
but
I haven't done it.
But you have all the ammo you need. You've just shown us that you have all the ammo you need.
Yeah. And one last question is today. Yes.
No. I'm sorry, but we're done with questions tonight. We're way past.
Hey, yeah,
I got to cut
off.
We
really
go till 9:30, and I got to be the bad
9:30.
Guy.
9:30. 10:30.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to be able to do any more. So glad we could help you as much as we could tonight, but we got to wrap things up.
Thank you so much.
I got 5 to 7 seconds of good news.
Go for it, Jeff.
The New York AG and bank regulators have filed suit against Wells Fargo because their foreclosure procedures manual contains procedures for fabricating documents.
Well,
there you go. They're starting to eat each other.
On that coming to light. Yep.
Yes. If you get a copy of that, please send it to me, Jeff, and I'll throw it out there for everybody, pal.
It'll be in tonight's email blast.
All right.
No, the actual copy of the complaint itself?
I'll have to dig for it. I don't have it.
That's my point. So don't send anything out till we have that. Don't bother.
Yep. Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Yeah. That manual is something that surfaced here several months ago, and now there's
repercussions on
the
website.
That's a result of that. Yep. Absolutely. So, all right. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow afternoon, we've got a webinar, and who is doing the webinar tomorrow?
Mr. John.
That's Mr. John, and your subject matter is?
Well, you know, we covered how to deal with credit card lawsuits for the past three ones that I did with motions to dismiss and all the other stuff, so I'm giving a complete overview for anyone that thinks they're going to be in trouble, where to start way ahead of time. So that you can profit from the whole situation.
Yeah, and that'll be a good time for people to ask questions and pick John's brain with him being the strategist that he is. He's a really, really good one to have available to you. So take advantage of that. 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow afternoon. You got to be a member of the site to get in. If you're not a member, hurry up and get yourself signed up. And then you can enjoy John's company tomorrow and pick his brain. Then, of course, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern is Terry's call. If you are not on her email list, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. Simply say, I'd like to be on the list. Then you'll get the reminder. Do it right away. Whatever you do, don't wait, because if you procrastinate, you won't get the reminder for tomorrow with all the call information. Then, of course,
I'd like to get a message out, too. I've had quite a few people who have sent me requests via email to be added to the list, and I keep getting the same requests over and over and over again, add me to the list. Well, they're on the list, but the problem is apparently my emails are going to their trash or their spam, or I'm not in their whitelist or whatever. And one of them today had the good sense to send me the message again, and this time put his telephone number in there. So I was able to call him and work the problem out. If you have asked me to be added to the list and you're not getting my emails, it's on your end. So send me your phone number. I'll give you a call, and we'll try to get it fixed.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, and then as we go around the clock from Wednesday to Monday, all of you members, you have the forum, and everybody should be using the forum not only to post your questions that you have and get answers in the meantime when there are no calls, and also it's a learning experience for everybody that comes behind you. When we come in and answer those questions for you, it creates a huge library of Q&A. To help people going forward, and all of us can learn from that. So don't forget to use that. Of course, again, you have to be a member. Get yourself signed up. Then next Monday at 9 o'clock Eastern is Dallas Death Discussion. We're in our sixth year. We never miss a Monday, even when I'm sick or whatever, like I was last night.
When you fall down and break your face, yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I bent a computer case with my face and tried to poke a hole into the apartment below me with my kneecap, and that did not work well. But I am getting better. But anyway, Dallas Death Discussion is still on TalkShoe. The PIN number is 54318. That does start at 9 o'clock Eastern. And that, as I've said so many times, along with this call and Terry's call on Wednesday night, are not substitutes for being a member of the website. You get bits and pieces here. You need the full story. You need to be a member. And when you get into the membership situation, because of the fact that this is not about making money on a website, that it's about getting people involved and getting information in their hands, you get two IP addresses for each membership, and people can share those. We have a number of people to do that. It's encouraged. It's not like, oh, we're going to cheat and we're going to let you in, and we only each got to pay $25 a piece a month. That's encouraged, so please take advantage of it. Talk to your friends. Split your costs. We know money is tight for a lot of people, so take advantage of it. So with that said, I think we got it all. Jesse, you got a parting word?
Yeah, one more. Guys, you're going to hear it first tonight. It looks like we are going to go ahead and launch the foreclosure webinar series on October 7th. You'll be the first. Woo, what's all that noise? You'll be the first to hear it tonight. I haven't even sent an email. That'll be Gary and I confirmed October 7th, guys. So for those of you that are not members, if you're not a member, you're not going to be on it. And I promise you, you're definitely not going to want to miss it, because that thing's got about 600 pages of documentation, every motion you can imagine, discovery, and a whole entire trial transcript that we're going to do as a mock trial. I'm going to have Judge David Mack and Judge Terry, because she was a woman for the other side. We're actually going to go through the trial and do a mock trial. It's going to be a lot of fun. And this is the first any even of the moderators have heard of it. So it's going to be a real fun fall going through this, because a lot of people don't know how to handle themselves in court. And I'm going to set this all up, because this is an actual trial that I won. I've won all of them this year, but this is one that we won that we had to change strategies at the last minute, and it's going to blow you away. I'm not going to give it away, but it's a very, very unique situation. And again, all of us get built up and nervous over it. But at the end of the day, when you get there and you realize what's happening, you go, oh, hell, this is going to be easier than what I thought it was. So it's not worth racking your nerves. So remember, October 7th, guys, tons and tons and tons of motions and documentation and discovery, and then the actual transcript and the trial itself. So it's going to be a real fun experience. So, again, guys, if you're not a member, try to get in there. Like Dave said, share it, get in there, and get her done. With that said, God bless everybody. Check your emails. Thank you again, all the moderators. Can't do it without you. Spread the word, guys. And for those of you that money is tight, you need to join, and money won't be tight. I promise you're going to see a check for $45,000 on Thursday that my buddy Dave just got. So if it's tight, it's on you. That's the way I look at it. Simple as that. The resources are there. You just got to put them to work. So God bless everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you tomorrow at 3. I'll be with John tomorrow. So.
All right.
All right,
guys.
Good night, everybody. Have a great evening.
Great night.
Good night.
See you going forward.
All righty, guys.